Welcome to the Innovation Navigation Podcast. I'm Dave Robertson, and I'll be joining you here each week to talk about the management of innovation. On this show, we don't talk about innovations or innovators. We don't talk about how cool the new iPhone is or how great Steve Jobs was. On Innovation Navigation, we focus on the management of innovation, how to make the people around you more innovative, how to make your department, your business unit, your company, your community more consistently and successfully innovative. Today and every week, we'll speak with smart people who have figured out some part of the process of innovation and ask them what they've learned about becoming more reliably and successfully innovative. And today we've got a really fun show. I've been looking forward to this one for a while. We're going to talk to two experts in a very interesting innovation experiment that's been going on for close to 30 years now. Back in the mid-80s, Guinness, the beer, the Irish beer, now owned by a company called Diageo, recognized that each time an Irish pub opened in Europe, there was a spike in the sales for Guinness beer. That the first time that people tried Guinness, and a lot of times the way they continued consuming Guinness, was in an Irish pub. And so they pulled together designers, industry experts, people from Guinness, to create a process of building Irish pubs around the world. And so we're going to talk to two people who were involved in this and are still involved in this. The first is Donald Balance. Donald is a former senior manager for Guinness and current head of his own Irish pub consulting practice, Balance Hospitality. Donald's going to explain to us the whole process, the history of this concept, and how it works.
As you quite rightly said, we have to go back to the late 80s and early 90s to get to the beginning of the story. The increase wasn't just coming from those Irish pubs, although the increase from them was significant. It was also coming from generic bars and restaurants which surrounded these pubs. Not only was this happening, it was happening in markets where Guinness really did not anticipate strong growth: Italy, France, Germany, Switzerland, Holland, Spain, and so on. And you got to remember that back in the late 80s, early 90s, about 90% of Guinness draft beer was consumed in either Ireland or the United Kingdom. And the thought started to emerge that if Guinness could seed new markets with really great, authentic Irish pubs, there was a distinct opportunity to create a halo effect where the brand would gain wider recognition with consumers, and leading consumers to demand it more, and therefore for generic operators to put it into their beer lineups. So what they did was they decided they would have to take a closer look at, you know, what made these Irish pubs so successful, because, you know, we have to remember that these pubs were in very diverse communities and markets throughout Europe and elsewhere. So the Guinness assembled a group of designers and restaurateurs, marketers and realtors, and they basically asked them to go into Europe for a few months and look, visit lots of pubs, and then report back with their findings.
So tough work.
It's a very tough job, but somebody has to do it.
Yeah.
Most of these pubs faithfully and authentically tried to replicate the great mid and late Victorian pubs of Dublin or Belfast. So there had been a very significant investment from the owners in their design, in the interior decor and millwork and so on. Another linkage they found was that most of the pub owners had had the millwork and interior design features manufactured in Ireland. There are very specific design features within authentic Irish pubs that really can only be recreated by artisans in Ireland who have been doing this for the last 150, 200 years.
You guys from Guinness knew beer and you knew Ireland, but there's an awful lot here that you don't understand. How did you gain that knowledge about how to put that together for your potential pub owners?
Clearly unable to roll out, you know, a series of Irish pubs themselves, the Guinness team really devised a strategy that would increase the rate at which the pubs opened, but allow other people to do it on their behalf. So they called this project the Guinness Irish Pub Concept. And what they did was they reached out, as clever people do, they reached out and engaged with companies that would benefit from driving the development of those pubs. So other companies that would also benefit from an increase in the rate at which they opened. There were no contractual arrangements between anybody at the time, and to this day, it remains that way. All of this was really done on a handshake and continues to be done on a handshake. We get you off to a good start. That's principally what we do, and then we hold your hand through that process and right through the first, you know, 6 to 12 months of opening. So we prevent you from making the most commonly made, you know, mistakes that restaurateurs, new restaurateurs make when they go into business. So it's really, we keep you on the right road. We keep you profitable. We ensure that the numbers that you're achieving are, you know, are correct within the industry, and that they're going to make you money.
And let's jump to the end. Has it worked? I mean, you mentioned that 90% of Guinness is consumed in UK and Ireland. Do you know that number now?
Yeah, about 60. I think it's around 68% of Guinness is now consumed in Ireland and the UK, and the remainder is consumed throughout the rest of the world. Guinness draft beer is as distinct from cans of beer or bottled beer, bottled Guinness, because Guinness draft is still manufactured only in Dublin and exported throughout the rest of the world. But to answer your question, over a period of approximately 5 years, 6 years, around 2,500 pubs opened in Europe, leading to close to about 500,000 additional barrels of Guinness annually sold throughout Europe.
You don't know anything in a beer company about, you know, woodworking and food preparation and you know, construction and design and so forth. And that I'm sure that there were some people within Guinness who thought, you know, what are we doing this? How did you overcome internal resistance?
I suppose the context here is that Guinness at the time, even though it was a mega manufacturer of beer, it was a relatively small company. It was based out of Ireland and a little bit out of London, and Guinness as a company has been a leader in innovation, from the get go. I mean, you have to remember that the founder of Guinness, signed a 9,999 year lease on a plot of land in Dublin, which became the Guinness Brewery. And like, this guy was 19 years of age, or 21 years of age, I should say. And, he was taking a huge risk here. You know, Guinness was the first company to export its beer outside of its country of origin. And I could list maybe, 10 or 15 other innovations, from, narrow gauge railway to shipping that would also, give you an idea of why they're an innovative company. But the reality is we had the freedom at the time from the company. There was very little internal resistance. It was just say, this sounds like a good idea. Let's go with it and see what happens. And, I think we used to have a saying in Guinness. We used to say, before you throw an idea in the garbage, think three positive thoughts about it.
And now we're going to talk with Darren Fagan. Darren is one of the partners of the Irish Pub concept and a business developer for the Irish Pub Company. And so he works more on the manufacturing side and developing and designing these pubs.
Initially, we work with clients to take the ideas that they have and develop an Irish pub that's very unique to them. One thing that we do ensure is that each pub is designed very individual for that location, is very unique, and we never repeat the same design twice. And that's one of the characters of Irish pubs in Ireland, and something we stay true to. So once we develop the design, we have a good story attached to that design and a good hook to that design. Our focus then is to manufacture it, and that's a very complex part of the whole project. So we get the nice, the fluffy part out of the way, which is the design, that's the exciting part, but then we get down to the details and actually breaking it down, figuring out all of the ways to ship it across to wherever destination it's going to go to. And ensuring that it gets put together in the right way, right manner, and certainly on time, budget, and quality. That's the three key parts to what we do on the build part.
And so the pubs are still made in Ireland today.
Yes, they are. It's fascinating that it's not that it still is, but that we were able to do this across every corner of the world from such a small country. But the reality is, not just in the millwork, but in light fixtures, glass, signage, the bric-a-brac, everything that, constitutes the interior of an Irish pub. Those industries were developed many, many years ago. So even before Irish pubs were exported all over the world, they existed in Ireland, and extremely talented people have been doing it for such a long time. So finding them wasn't that difficult. The part was how to bring them all together and figure out ways then to take that once it's all put together in Ireland and then shipping it across. But the talent pool in Ireland is phenomenal.
What did you learn from that process of trying to create this new thing differently each time with a set of people with lots of different skills, all thousands, tens of thousands of miles away from where it's actually going to be used?
Initially, when the concept started, everybody was very intrigued by this idea because there wasn't a lot of examples of it around the world. So we had a lot of this, we had a lot of license on how we were going to do this, but they were all very true to Irish culture. As we worked through the years and we went into different countries, it came less about the romantic connection to Ireland, very much about real business. And we were able to learn those very quickly and introduce those things into our designs, particularly in the US, where it's less about a drinking culture, more about a dining culture. So we had to facilitate that because a lot of the furniture that we that was manufactured, say, in the late mid to late 90s would be very much designed around drinking customers. So there'd be smaller tables where everybody could huddle around, but that didn't facilitate dining customers very well. So that sounds like a very simple thing, but you had to now suddenly redesign your catalog of furniture to suit a different market.
I'm Dave Robertson, and that's our show for the week. I'd like to thank all of our guests and our producer, Mike Hanley. If you'd like to find out more about our guests, go to our website, InnoNavi.com. You can get links to our guest books and blogs and websites. We also have a set of features, the feed of the week, the book of the week, and the technique of the week, so you can learn more about the process of innovation. That's InnoNavi.com. And if you're not already, follow us on Twitter. Every week I'll send out a signed copy of my book on innovation at the LEGO Group to a randomly selected Twitter follower. You can follow the show at InnoNavi. That's InnoNavi. Thanks for joining us on Innovation Navigation. I'm Dave Robertson, and I'll be back again next week.